Boy, I'll tell you what. Quite a day in Toronto sports today. For a variety of reasons. Let's see if the Jays can give us any drama tonight. The Jays are opening a three-game series against the Devers-less Red Sox at Fenway Park. We got a really big show ahead. Alana Rizzo will join us, not Alana Rizzo. Alana can't make it, so we're bringing Alana Rizzo on.
Really?
Alana Rizzo. Dan Shulman. it's just I struggle with pronunciations. But at least I can say shawarma. Dan Shulman will be along. And, of course, the skipper, John Schneider, joins us in a few minutes from Fenway Park. Brian Anderson, and you're saying, why do you have a Rays analyst on? Well, we're having a Rays analyst on because one of their players says they're the best team in the AL.
Well, he ain't lying.
Well, he's not lying. And
Tigers might have said something about that.
Any excuse to have Brian Anderson on is a good excuse.
So there
we'll have BA on later. All right, breaking news. Vladdy Jr. is not in the lineup today. You know, of course, that he was hit on the right forearm yesterday. Lo and behold, Jose Ramirez, who was hit by Kevin Gausman in retaliation. Well, I'm saying it's in retaliation. I'm sure Kevin did it. It was just accidental. But anyhow, he's not in the lineup either. So an eye for an eye, an arm for an arm. The Jays lineup is the Jays lineup is as follows: Bo Bichette, who hits a bazillion at Fenway Park, leading off. Vladdy also, by the way, hits a bazillion at Fenway Park. But Bo Bichette is leading off. Addison Barger at third. Alejandro Kirk hitting in the third spot. He's catching. George Springer, DHing Nathan Lucas. Ernie Clements at first base. Andres Jimenez at second base. Jonathan Class A in left field. Alan Roden in right field. On the mound, Jose Berríos for the Blue Jays against Brian Baio of the Boston Red Sox. If the Jays win tonight, they will be 44-37.
Wow.
Halfway through the year.
There it is.
They were also 44-37 in 2023 after 81 games. They were also 44-37 in 2022 after 81 games. They were 43-38 in 2021 after 81 games. Last year they were 38-43 after 81 games. So, despite all the stuff that has or hasn't happened for this team, Kevin Barker, they That's an 8-game turnaround, 5-game turnaround, something like that. Pretty big turnaround if they win tonight.
Yeah,
if they don't, then all the numbers I said are irrelevant.
Well, I think there's been a lot of surprises, right? I think there's some guys that we didn't think coming into the season were going to be, you know, borderline, I don't want to say great, but, you know, good enough that you're okay penciling their name in the lineup every single day, and they have been, like the Springers of the world, the Kirkies of the world. You can add Barger to the mix. You know, Bo Bichette being healthy and starting to do things that we expect him to do consistently. The bottom of the lineup, whoever John pencils in there is doing things, right? Bunting, small ball.
Catching
the
ball.
Running the bases.
They catch
defense.
The ball in the outfield.
There it is.
Catch baseball the ball in the
IQ
outfield.
When it just comes to every day playing a baseball game, they're really good at. The big three in the rotation for the most part. Every adjustment they need to make, they've made it. The bullpen's at least better than it was last year. I know they've had some hiccups. But when everybody's healthy, it obviously is way better than it was last year, and the American League stinks. So it just gives you a door to open so you can run through it, not walk through it.
Further to your point, this is from the Jays game notes. Shout out to the Jays PR department because this really kind of surprised me. Kind of snuck up on me. Since May 8th, the Jays are 27-17. That's a .614 winning percentage. That's third in MLB. The Rays are at .667. The Astros are at .667. I don't know what I'm more surprised about. The Jays are third in that category, or that 27-17 would be the third best. In other words, what I'm saying, the same thing you are. There's a lot of teams kind of just certainly American League, nobody's really kind of separating themselves. Or nobody has really separated themselves from the pack so far. Yeah. Maybe the Astros are probably the one team that I would suggest has really kind of seized control of their division in the American League. I mean, well, Detroit's kind of had it from the get-go, but The Astros have really kind of left their mark on the AL West.
Yeah, they're pitching well. Hunter Brown is something to watch. If you haven't seen him pitch, you need to tune in every 5 days to watch him pitch. He might be the best pitcher in the American League.
I was going to say, I felt guilty yesterday. We talked to Brent Lavallee, and we were talking about all the good young pitchers in the game, Skeens, blah, blah, blah. Look, he's not Paul Skeens, but we have to stop start putting Hunter Brown in that category, do we not?
Yeah, remember, too, the Jays are 25-16 at home. That is called home field advantage.
The Jays are not at home tonight. They are at Fenway Park in Boston. That is where we find the manager of the Blue Jays, John Schneider. There he is.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing, man?
What's up, guys?
How you doing? So Vladdy's not in the lineup today. What is the extent of that injury? Is it a day-to-day thing? Were there any further tests needed? Or
yeah, nothing further than x-rays yesterday, kind of day-to-day. And he's going to get some treatment again here today, see if he can do anything. And if he can help us later in tonight's game, great. But, yeah, really just kind of a day-to-day thing and seeing how he's feeling.
John, obviously, as you've, I'm sure, noticed, you know, pitchers are starting to throw Vladdy in a little bit more. That seems to be where they're, you know, trying to get him out. When he does come back and you're penciling his name in the lineup every single day, what does he have to do? You know, I don't want to say mechanically, but just the entire totality of what he's trying to do, getting the foot down, being athletic, all those things, to consistently beat the guy to the spot.
Yeah, I think it's like you nailed it. It's just kind of being in sync and rhythm. It's funny. Certain teams definitely, I think, pitch him in quite a bit. Certain teams don't, you know. But I think he knows that going in, and it's just getting everything kind of sorted out on time. It was funny, even before he got hit yesterday, I shouldn't say funny, but he was having a little bit of trouble with Bobby's kind of cadence to the plate, you know. So as long as he's getting that toe tap done consistently, again, it's not like we want him to be swinging at those real, you know, hard sinkers in. You still got to get it kind of in a zone where you can handle it. And I think if he's synced up, he can do that just fine.
John, is it crazy for me to ever say he needs sometimes a plan B, maybe mechanical? You know, all that stuff is hard sometimes just to sync up. You know, the way the fastballs move all over the place now, it's the velocity in. It's very hard to know plate awareness, that kind of thing. Any conversation ever around him to maybe say, tone one of the two down, change one of them, eliminate one of them, not saying for long periods of time, but maybe trying to do that just to give yourself a better chance to catching up to what you need to catch up to. I see you smiling, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think easy answer is no. You know what I mean? I know Bo's different, you know, two strikes, less than two strikes, right? Vlad, he actually has a little bit. There's some pitchers that are like one to the plate that we see that he does things a little bit differently. Sometimes it's kind of a no stride. To me, it kind of. It affects his actual swing when he's doing that. And okay. I've seen him do it, you know, quite a bit. So not something you want to really get into the weeds with Vlad. I think it's just a matter of making sure everything's done on time. You know, hitting is all about timing. And we have a few guys that are like that. You know, they're always wondering what times are at the plate with runners on. You know, all right, what do I need to do with my lower half, my feet, my hands? But I don't think Vlad needs a plan B at this time. You know, but I think if it's becoming more and more of a consistent thing where teams are really pitching him in, you know, I don't think many pitchers pitch in consistently for strikes, right? So it's usually, you know, something to show in there, something for weak contact. And if you can kind of just dismiss it, and if he does it three times in a row, you tip your hat, you move on to the next bat. But I don't want Vlad messing with anything, you know, because a few pitches have been, you know, in or third of the play.
I'm glad I asked. That's a good answer. Yeah.
Thanks,
there
Kev.
There you go, bud. Okay, you're up,
Appreciation Jeff. Society. No, I mean, I have no problem with it.
Because what I see from afar is obviously not what you're talking about and what you see. That's why I wanted to ask the question, because they are pounding him in. Like, so that was a fair answer you gave.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think if there's a certain way to pitch in, you know what I mean? It's if you can do it, I think it opens up, you know, we got guys that do it, you know, Hosey, Chris, they're doing it more. You have to, against certain hitters. So if you're, like I said, if you're dotting three right on right fastballs in, good for you. You know, those are three really good pitches within an at bat. So, with the way the game is now too, with the spin that's involved and, Guys are leaning on that more and more. So it's an adjustment thing for sure. And you got to kind of just see what they're doing to you.
John, given Kevin Gausman's performance yesterday, going forward, are you going to, the schedule's the schedule, right? Will you try to get him an extra day as much as possible? What did he pitch yesterday on? It was the sixth day.
Two extra days.
And he talked about having two bullpens, which, he seemed to think helped them mechanically. Is this something going forward you'll try to do consciously? I don't even know if you can, having looked at the schedule, but is it something you'll try to do consciously?
I think we're in the middle where we're just starting 16 out of 16 right here. So it's going to be tough. But with Kev in particular, numbers are pretty clear, cut and dry, kind of like Vlad hitting two or Vlad hitting three. Kev on an extra day of rest is pretty good. So I think the two bullpens in between, that's probably not his norm. I think that's him and Pete working through some directional stuff with his delivery. It's a veteran pitcher putting in a little bit of extra work to try to, find some things. So that's not the norm. But I do think with all these guys, right, they're not getting any younger. Right? We joke about that all the time with them. And if we can get them extra days rest, we're definitely going to do it. And not just with Kev, but I think with all of them.
Hosey's obviously pitching tonight. It's going to be the third time this year he's facing the Red Sox and going to Fenway with the Green Monster. Anything that's important for him because of that Green Monster early in the game against the Red Sox?
I think this ballpark, it's one of my favorites, but it's unique. You got to kind of pitch to it a little bit. So a lot of lefties in the lineup like they always do against him. He's got to command both sides. Cutter's a big pitch. Front door two-seamer's a big pitch for him. I feel like he's been burned a little bit here on some pitches out over. You think about Duran, you think about Abreu, not Devers anymore, which is nice, but you can play a pepper with that thing a little bit if you're just hunting out over. So.
Do me a favor, by the way, John, just to interrupt, but if the Boston media talks to you today before the game, just tell them how happy you are Devers isn't there. It'll go over just really well. Yeah, just tell him that. A little media relations advice there.
Just walk into Brez's office. Yeah, just tell him thanks.
Yeah.
You have to kind of pitch to the park a little bit. So Hosey's been consistent. He knows these guys. They know him, And on the topic of pitching to both sides of the plate, I think it's really, really important to do that here.
Yeah.
Tonight does mark the halfway point of the season, a win in your 44-37. This is probably a better thing to ask after tonight's game is over, but like considering I'm an optimist here. So, at the halfway point of the season, John, what has been, you think, the best thing you've seen? And I'm not going to ask you what concerns you the most, but what is the thing that you are perhaps most aware of? I'll ask it that way.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes.
Looking at the season as a whole so far, right, halfway after tonight, I think that I've been very, very pleased with the way everyone in the lineup has contributed. I feel like we've talked about the bottom of our order quite a bit, and I feel like we're getting to the point to where the top of the order is doing what we expected them to do with Bo, Vlad, hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball over the fence. So I've been very, very aware of that. Guys like Miles, guys like Nate Lucas, Heineman. You kind of, Ernie, what he's done, you can kind of name a lot of them. And it's really kind of kept us, where we wanted to be. When the year started and, we've missed Tony now for a while, you're kind of looking at, guys at the bottom to get on, do some things, and you're kind of built for, you're looking for home runs at the top. And when that wasn't happening, I feel like these guys kind of figured out their identity, if that makes sense. And I really, really like the way we've kind of meshed together as a lineup. I love the way we've run the bases in the past month, which has been a huge point of emphasis for a long time. And the guys are taking to it. So those things jump out at me. And then I think what you're super aware of going down in the second half and really for the whole season is just taking care of your starters. It's such a unique group that is going to keep you in every single game. But how can we, A, protect them with rest, and B, how can we continue to help them evolve with today's game? So that's what I'm aware of. And to kind of tie it in, too, it's just bullpen workload. And I feel like we've kind of reset that a little bit. That was running real high there the first month of the season. And, hopefully we get Jimmy back. That will be huge for us. And you can kind of manipulate some guys' outings and not be leaning on the same guys every single night. So that's what I'm – starting pitching is what I'm definitely aware of in the second half. And how can I protect them, push them when they need to be pushed, get them out when they need to get out, and kind of just keep them in a good spot.
You mentioned the bullpen. With Flew Hardy, how can tough times help him be better going forward?
Good question. You know, Flew is probably one of the biggest examples of he's not going to leave any stone unturned. That's what's gotten him to this point. He is going to get every ounce of ability that God has blessed him with, you know? So, tough outings, he's learned from them. You know, he's learned from outings. I've thrown him in the fire and some high leverage, and he's learned from that. I think what he's going through right now is just he's a rookie. It's a major league season. He's left-handed. There's going to be specific spots for him. And, you know, I think it catches up to you a little bit. And it's part of evolving into the big leagues and part of, you know, the adjustment process that's going to happen for everyone. So he's definitely taken everything he's gone through. He's leaning on guys like Chad Green and Hoff, even Little, who hasn't been here that long, but leaning on those guys in terms of how much he's throwing before games. How do you take care of yourself? How does your body respond the next day after you go back to back? All that kind of stuff. So confident is an understatement in him kind of figuring out how to maneuver all those things that come with the big league season.
Yeah, you mentioned Hoffman. Looked pretty good in his last outing. What did you think about it? What do you think helped him with the split finger a little bit more in his last outing?
Yeah, when he's right, man, it's three pitches he can strike you out with. And I think what we've learned from Hoff, it's been a little bit of a kind of irregular appearance schedule for him. I think he was on the bump like 2 out of 8 days at some point before the game in Cleveland. I think it's maybe fine-tuning kind of some of the in-between stuff. You know, there's only so many bullets that you want to fire pitchers, you know, not just here but everywhere. But I think him learning to kind of say, okay, let me get maybe a little bit more time on the mound and feel what my stuff's doing, as opposed to just kind of feeling through that when he's coming in for an inning. So the split, when it's on, it's nasty. And again, I've said it before with Hoff, everything works well when he's using his fastball appropriately.
Yeah.
So it's he's kind of gotten back to that a little bit, and I think it makes the split and the slider that much better.
Last question from us, John. Andrés Giménez, what are you seeing anything from him in the past couple of games that makes you think that he might be getting back to what he needs to be offensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the consistency of the at-bats. The weird thing about him is, he's grinding, right? He's pressing. He wants to do more than what he's doing. He wants to get back to the way he started the season. But I think what people don't see is the way he works and the relationship he has with Pop and Hunter and Lou. And I think right now he is in a spot to where he's trying to be useful. And useful meaning putting the ball in play. Hit and run with him a couple times to try to just get him going and not think. And I honestly think he's at his best when he's just a little bit more free. You know, he's such a good athlete on defense and on the baseball field. And I think when he gets into spots like this, he takes his athleticism away from himself in the batter's box. Like if you look back at video from the beginning of the year to where he is now, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit safer right now. So confidence in him turning around, yeah, absolutely. The dude can hit. You know what I mean? I'll stand by that, whether he's hitting 190 or, you know, we thought he was Barry Bonds the first week of the season. The dude can hit, you know. So it's just a matter of him, I think, just gaining a little bit of confidence. It's tough to miss a month of the season with the injury. And, he helps you win every single day. So I think you need a couple hits to get you going. And I think once that does, I think you see a little bit more freedom in his at-bats.
Okay, I promise this is the last one. With Bo, his numbers at home and on the road are very dramatic. They're a huge difference, as you well know. What do you think explains that?
Baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that there's definitely something to the routine you have at home and the resources you have at home, right? So we've actually started traveling with one of the machines that we have at home, which is kind of a big deal because it takes up a lot of space on the plane. But it's, I think, just trying to replicate that environment and get guys ready. Bo could probably, I think he's the caliber of hitter where, you know, in a month from now, those numbers may be the exact opposite. It kind of just depends on Bo. But I know he's comfortable at home. He has an awesome routine at home. He has an awesome routine on the road. And it's just, I think it's just one of those weird baseball things that, you know, he may like hearing his walk-up song at home. Who knows? Maybe that gets him going. But I think it's just baseball, and good hitters are good hitters. And Bo's definitely that.
Yeah.
Jimmy's good to go on Monday, as far as you know?
Yeah, he's going to pitch on Sunday in Buffalo.
Okay.
And then travel back. He's been good. You know, two outings in Florida felt good. Stuff was good. And he's going to pitch Sunday in Buffalo, travel up to us Sunday night, and see where he's at in terms of getting ready to roll.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Well, Santander, it's rare that we hear something positive about him. Are you starting to worry about that? I had to ask. Forgot.
No. I think what we found out was, you know, the shoulder was probably a little bit more involved than we thought in initially, you know, and he was playing through it. So I don't worry about it. I know that Tony knows his body extremely well and takes a lot of pride in not being hurt. So he is not a happy camper right now, I can tell you that. And not worried about it. I think within the next, you know, week or so, hopefully he starts to get going with some more activity and start swinging. And we obviously are going to welcome him back, you know, as soon as we can. But not at the stage yet to where you're worried about him.
Okay, good.
Okay, John, one more thing. No, go get him tonight. Yeah. Thank you for doing
thanks,
this.
Thanks, buddy. Sorry Take about care. All that.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
okay.
it. Okay,
be yeah, well. See you later. Take care. John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays. So a week and a bit, maybe before you see Anthony Santander, you see a little more clarity on him.
Jimmy's close, sounds
Jimmy's
like.
Jimmy's close. Boy. And getting him back for that Yankees
huge.
Series. Is massive because that will be the biggest series of the year.
I mean, that depends on who you ask. Ask anybody other than you.
That would be the biggest series of the year.
It's one of them.
No, it is.
The Red Sox, to too. Point. Where the Red Sox are at, you could stomp on their neck right now. Add a little bit more separation, which would be nice in Boston. Absolutely.
So a lot of interesting stuff is always the case with John. Taking their hitting machine
I'm
on
glad
the plane,
I asked.
Oh, it's good.
It is.
That's great. I mean, I wonder, did that mean they'd have to kick three khakis off the flight to get the machine on? I mean, there's a weight issue.
Well, I mean, there's an underneath.
No, it's...
I mean, seriously.
Wait, you put the khakis underneath?
You can probably.
I mean, it's there.
Adapt and overcome. You know what I'm saying?
It's pressurized. That's interesting.
Make them dry.
What also I found really interesting, though, is about Jeff Hoffman. And you just... And this gets to, I think, maybe what John meant when he was talking in spring training about... Yeah, the idea, in a perfect world, Jeff Hoffman's your closer, and he goes off and rattles off 40 saves, and everything's good. But I think John kind of realized that there was going to be that gradual process.
Yeah.
That, to me, is key. The fact that trying to figure out routine and sort of – and you know what? This is where Jimmy Garcia being hurt might have an impact.
Oh, okay. It's a sort of a trickle-down effect. You sort of see, if you close your eyes, think about where every guy's stuff fits in the best. His stuff fits in the ninth inning. Jimmy's would fit somewhere between the sixth and the eighth inning. Yariel Rodriguez, sixth and eighth inning. The two lefties, the fifth, sixth-ish inning. You're trying to sort of trickle-down effect, right? When the lineup turns over, it's normally not the ninth inning. The meat of the order is normally in the eighth inning.
Right.
You want your nastiest, most experienced guy in the eighth inning. Yariel is, you know, getting it down, getting it singing. When it comes to all that stuff he's trying to do and the split finger and the hard velocity and the movement and the self-correcting, he's doing all that. So perfect scenario is you have Hoffman figure out whatever he's got to figure out. I mean, John's sort of making excuses. Let's be real. It's about the Jimenez thing. Making it. I mean, you take a sort of a long look about how good of a hitter he is. I mean, quite frankly, lately ain't real good at it. So, you know, John's doing what John's supposed to be doing because he knows big picture with who's coming back, where they fit in the best out of your pen, what Jimenez can bring to you, where you could use other guys when he's playing second.
It just makes all kinds of sense.
I'm going to say this, though,
because I know this goes back a ways. But one of the things Felipe Alou was very good at was creating closers. He turned John Wendland into a closer. He turned Mel Rojas into a closer. He turned a guy named Ugueto Urbina into a closer. Made those guys a lot of money. Now I know that's a different time. We're talking the early 90s to mid 90s. But I really do think that there is a thing about once you think you have become the guy, trying to make stuff around it work. And I think it's different when people are telling you you're our guy compared to, hey, you know what? You've got good enough stuff. I mean, maybe down the road. And I just, because I remember Felipe talking about it. He said, you know, a lot of times with these guys, so you got to spend more time telling them how to go about getting ready than simply, and you know, because this gets to your point about not everybody's wired for the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And you've got to figure out a way. And yeah, I think maybe there's a little bit of an excuse there, but I can also see it. I think that would explain to me the inconsistency without the velo drop. You know, like if a guy was going out and throwing 99 one game, then 94 the next game, then 99 the next game, then 90, you'd have some worries. So, yeah, I think there might be a little something to that. And I think it would, frankly, to probably be easier for John had Jimmy been here to do that.
Oh, no question. You could have put Jimmy in the ninth inning.
Yeah,
no
maybe question. Back off Hoffman a little bit.
Absolutely. Then they'd have multiple options.
I agree with you. I don't know
how you were trying to sugarcoat it and try and make the ninth inning guy look, because Hoffman's been a little hit or miss most of the year. I mean, he went through a little pocket there where he was dominant because he was dotting the heater. That's why John was saying it's very important, mm-hmm. right? Everything feeds off of the 95-plus. He locates that. And what did we say at the beginning of the season? Man, that's the way it's supposed to look because of what we'd been seeing in the past. Not saying what we'd been seeing in the past wasn't good enough, but it sure didn't look like that early on. And then it gets to when there's bumps in the road, and you're giving up homers to, quite frankly, dudes you shouldn't be giving them up to.
Well, the homers.
How do you fix it?
The homers.
It's a problem. And the walking the leadoff hitter a lot, that's a problem too. So John gets back to that routine thing, trying to figure it's all kinds of. Boy, it will help getting Jimmy back.
We've got Brian Anderson joining us, Dan Shulman. We've got Jay's Angels tickets to give away when we come back. Alana Rizzo joins us. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker for a Friday. 7:10 will be... 7:10 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays take on the Boston Red Sox in the first of a three-game series from Fenway Park. Alana Rizzo is, I like to call her the hardest-working woman in baseball. Mm-hmm. She's with Nesson. She's host of Foul Territory. She's also a contributor to Blue Jays Central and Sportsnet. And I'm just going to stay in the East. All the stuff you do out West, I mean, we'll leave that for another time. Thanks for doing this, Alana. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate you joining us.
Great to be with you again. How are you?
We are very well. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, the Red Sox returning to Boston after the Rafael Devers situation, in terms of drama, you know, we had Rob Bradford on Friday night, Fenway Park, no Devers, lots of beer. In terms of Red Sox drama for Red Sox Nation, what should we expect tonight?
Well, I think there's been a lot of drama over the course of the last 4 or 5 years for the Boston Red Sox, has there not? And they're not doing themselves any favors, guys, coming off five straight losses on this road trip. I'm sure they're going to be happy to be back at Fenway, but the Toronto Blue Jays are catching the Boston Red Sox at a very good time. And I thought that the comments from Craig Breslow were interesting, that he really did feel that they would get more wins without Rafael Devers in the lineup than with him in it. And I don't see how that is possible. Whether you don't like the way that he said he wasn't going to play different positions, or whether you don't like the way things were handled, Rafael Devers is a hell of a player, and the San Francisco Giants just immediately got better with the acquisition of Devers. So the question is, how do they do it without him, and where do they go from here? I mean, this is a team that is a 500 team right now, two games below 500, in fact, whereas the Toronto Blue Jays are at 500. So there will be drama. There's a lot of animosity right now and a lot of hurt fans in Red Sox Nation that honestly are still not over the Mookie Betts trade. They're not over the fact that the Red Sox let Mookie Betts go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're not over the fact that the Red Sox seemingly did not do enough to keep Xander Bogaerts. And I had a conversation today with Julian McWilliams, who covers the Boston Red Sox for CBS Sports, and he's covered the Red Sox for a really long time. And he really feels that Rafael Devers would still be a Red Sox if Xander Bogaerts was still a Red Sox. So the Boston Red Sox are really trying to run the organization like they are the Tampa Bay Rays. And there's only one team that can run the organization like the Rays, and that is the Rays. And they've done it year in and year out. But Boston, nor Toronto, nor New York, nor Baltimore, for that matter, are the Rays. And I don't know what the Red Sox are doing right now, but they better figure it out quickly, because they are at a very perilous point of the season where if they don't turn this around, they're going to be sellers instead of buyers.
Alana, on that team, which player do you think needs to step up the most with all the things you just mentioned? Like Vladdy's out tonight for the Blue Jays because he got a hit in the arm, and other guys got to sort of fill in the blanks, pick up the slack. Is there a names in the everyday lineup that you think need to pick up the slack?
Well, I think there's a few, actually. I think if you look at the starting rotation, everybody besides Garrett Crochet needs to pick it up, right? You have Brian Bello going tonight against Jose Berríos, I think is a great pitching matchup, actually. And Brian Bello, to his credit, guys, has finally started to go deeper into the ballgames. The last three or four outings, he's finally been able to get into the sixth inning. And that was kind of a bugaboo of his, where he was not giving them length and the bullpen is dying. I think you can say that about the majority of teams right now, because the starting pitcher no longer goes deep into games. So when you see a guy go into the sixth or seventh, you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I think the rest of the starting rotation for the Red Sox has to pick it up. I mean, Walker Buehler has not looked good as a member of the Red Sox. I mean, he had 7 walks, I believe, in his last outing, and he entered that outing with an ERA of 10.5. Lucas Giolito has done well. He's been consistent, but he needs to pitch better. You know, and obviously they have Tanner Houck on the IL, and it just can't all land on the arm of Garrett Crochet. That being said, offensively, now without Devers and now without Bregman, who is hurt, who hopefully will come back in the next couple of weeks, you're leaning on the youth of what they believe is their future, the Boston Red Sox do. You obviously have Marcelo Meyer, you have Roman Anthony, you have Christian Campbell, you have Seydon Rafaela, and those are what they believe are the players that are going to take them to the promised land in the future. I think Rafaela's made a lot of improvement. Christian Campbell was, optioned down to AAA to work some things out. Jaron Duran isn't having the same type of all-star year that he has had in the past, but I do still believe that the Red Sox go as Jaron Duran goes, and he just needs to get going, he needs to get on base, and he needs to steal more bags. So I don't think it's one player that needs to turn it all around. I think out of the 26-man roster, I think there's probably 20 guys that need to figure it out. If I'm the Red Sox, I go after a catcher that can hit more than what Connor Wong is doing. I'm sorry, no disrespect to Connor Wong, but it's June 27th, and Connor Wong drove in his first run a couple of days ago, his first of the season. It can't all fall on the hands of Carlos Narvaez, who's been really good behind the plate for them, but they need improvement at the catching spot, and they need another slugger in the lineup to replace what they had in Devers.
Yeah. Alana, it was interesting you mentioned Jaron Duran, because that's where I was going to go. Look, this is a guy last year, I think a lot of us thought of me, what, he wasn't finishing the top 10 in MVP voting. He seemed to become a better defensive player. I mean, I was telling people a Jaron Duran triple to me is one of the most exciting plays in baseball. Mm-hmm. I looked at him and I thought this could be the next guy for the Red Sox. Do you think that he's been, be careful how he says, has he been exposed a bit by not having Rafi, not having Bregman, and kind of being out there a little too much on his own now? Or is that is that unfair to him?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that, right? I mean, he doesn't have as much protection in the lineup. And when you don't have Rafael Devers and when you don't have Alex Bregman, the entire lineup construction moves around. And then you have, on top of that, you don't have guys that have more than, 2 weeks in the big leagues. So Jarren Duran at the top of the order has a lot of responsibility, not only to get on base, but to steal bases, to score runs, but also to play a very good defensive outfield to lead this team. Because even though Jarren Duran is still young, compared to everybody else on this team right now, he's kind of a veteran player, plus all of the off the field garbage that happened with, the fans and the mental health situation and all of the things. I think Jarren Duran is dealing with a lot of things right now, but there's not a more competitive player out there, guys, and there's not a guy that wants to win more for this club than Jarren Duran. He was just on the Section 10 podcast last night or the day before, talking about how everybody wants him and expects him to be an all-star player every night, but nobody has more of an expectation of that than Jarren Duran himself, and I believe him. And I do really believe that this Red Sox offense goes as he goes. And until he gets it going, it's going to be a struggle, because you can't expect Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony and Seydon Rafaela and Willier Abreu, to a certain extent, who has provided dividends immediately after coming off the IL after missing 9 games with the oblique issue. You can't expect those guys to do it all. It needs to be a collaborative effort, up and down that lineup. And the Red Sox, for whatever reason, have not been able to gain any sort of positive traction at all this entire season.
Alana, you've been around some really good managers. You've covered some really good managers. Do you look at Alex Cora after this mess differently?
I don't. The one thing I think that people are kind of ragging on Alex Cora about is because he wanted to spend the entire day with his daughter at graduation. And a lot of folks were saying, you know what, it was in the morning, you could have made the game. And I think a lot of us at the back nine of our careers have to realize that, you know what, this is what I do, this is not who I am. And I don't think that Alex Cora is not the one committing the errors on the field. Alex Cora is not the one that sent Rafael Devers to the moon. Alex Cora is not the one that hurt Alex Bregman and put him on the IL. Alex Cora is not the one saying, we're not going to spend any money and I think we can do a better job without Rafael Devers in our lineup. He is doing the best that he can, in my opinion, with the 26 men that he is given on a day in and day out basis. And this is your roster. This is how we're going about it. This is a team that lacks fundamentals defensively. They lead the league in errors. This is a team that can't get down a big hit in a key situation. This is a team that you really can only pencil in a guaranteed win every fifth day, and that's when Garrett Crochet takes the ball. This is a team that has the most losses, I believe. Somebody fact check me on this. I believe has the most losses in one-run games. When you can't win the one-run game and you're committing errors all over the field and you know your biggest slugger is now in San Francisco and you have really one guy in the starting rotation that can pitch, I mean, they're lucky they're 2 games below 500. Mm-hmm.
Alana, how surprised are you at how well the Rays have been playing? I mean, they've got, what, their 667 winning percentage since May 8th. It's tied with the Astros. And then Yandy Diaz came out yesterday and said, I think we're the best team in the league. And Kevin and I both looked at each other and said, well,
they might be.
I mean, they might be.
I don't know if they're the best team in the league, guys, but I definitely know that I never count the Rays out because they do it perennially. This is a team, again, the only team that can do it the way that they do with the formula that they have and the payroll that they have it, playing in a minor league ballpark right now. Not minor league, but you know what I mean. Like a spring training facility at Steinbrenner Field. No, to no fault of their own, of course. But now the Major League Baseball is really going to have to start thinking about where are these teams going to play these postseason games? I mean, you think about the fact that it's about a 10,000 person stadium, and that's not going to play because about 7,500 of those tickets already are accounted for by the broadcasters, by the teams, by all of those things. I had this conversation with Ken Rosenthal on Fair Territory with Ken Rosenthal the other day. This is a problem now because Tampa Bay, as we sit here, is a half a game back of the New York Yankees for the division title, let alone wild card, where they hold a 4.5 game advantage in the wild card in the American League. So that's a real conversation. But to answer your original question, no, I'm not surprised. They've had really good starting pitching. Their offense has been just enough. They field the ball well. And this is just what Tampa Bay does. Every single year, they find a way with whoever they have. They teach guys how to play different positions in the minor leagues. It just works for them. It doesn't work for any other team. And big market teams continue to try to manage their own team like Tampa Bay, and it doesn't work.
I mean, if they're looking for a place to play in Florida in October, I can think
Miami.
Of, I was going to say, I can think of a team that you could probably go ahead and book hotel rooms right now.
Do you want people at the games, though? Do you actually want fans in the stands? Or
Good
I know it's a tough situation. I mean, that's an obvious answer, correct? But I mean, a lot of the fans in Tampa Bay won't even drive to St. Pete, let alone to Miami.
That is a fair point.
I mean, it may be a situation where the opposition is psyched to go to South Florida, in October. But yeah, it's not a situation I would like to be in charge of. But it's a conversation that Major League Baseball certainly is having now because they could very well win the division.
When Kershaw hangs him up, how should I talk about him?
When Clayton Kershaw comes up, is that what you said?
No, when he hangs him up, you know, it's over. The career's over.
Three strikeouts for 3,000.
Yeah, really? The man is three strikeouts away from 3,000. I've had the pleasure of having a front row seat to Clayton Kershaw for the majority of his big league career. 18 seasons now in a Los Angeles Dodgers uniform. And I started covering the Dodgers in 2014, which was obviously Clayton had already been there for a few years. But I had met Clayton even prior to my time with the Dodgers when he was given the Branch Rickey Award in Denver many, many, many years ago. And Clayton Kershaw, still to this day, is the hardest working guy out there. And I mean that sincerely. And they were talking about that in the broadcast during his last outing against the Colorado Rockies, that despite the fact that he has nothing to prove, and I would defend Clayton Kershaw until my last breath, the fact that Clayton Kershaw doesn't have anything to prove and he's still the hardest working guy on the team is something pretty special about Kersh. And he's had to completely reinvent himself, right? I mean, and how he hasn't had Tommy John surgery is beyond me. Maybe it's because he hasn't thrown 100 miles an hour his entire career like guys are trying to do now. But Clayton just continues to reinvent himself, and he still knows how to pitch, right? He's never been a thrower. He's always been a pitcher. And he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, no question about it. And, you know, I'm glad that he'll probably be able to reach, again, another milestone at home against the Chicago White Sox. Probably pretty easy, right? Colorado Rockies, Chicago White Sox, your last two outings. And somebody said, oh, well, you know, he got these last five against the Rockies. I'm like, well, the majority of his 2,997 aren't against the Rockies. Yes. So let's give the man the credit that he deserves. And, you know, he is still a huge part of that starting rotation. And thank goodness, because $102 million is on the IL with Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow and Roki Sasaki and, you know, and all these guys that the Dodgers expected to have in that rotation, and they don't have them there. So, you know, thank goodness that Yamamoto is there. Thank goodness that, you know, Dustin May has been there. Thank goodness that Clayton Kershaw has done what he's done. And then, you know, the AAA guys have been complimentary pieces, but Clayton is a Hall of Famer without a doubt. And it's just been I covered his no-hitter in 2014. Could have been a perfect game had it not been for Hanley Ramirez in the error. He's just a special player, and he's a special person, and I couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah, and I can tell you what, I don't think we're ever going to see anybody get 3,000 strikeouts. We might as well enjoy that strikeout because it's not happening again. Not in our lifetime.
Not in our lifetime.
Really good of you to do this, as
great
always.
Stuff.
Thanks so much. Great stuff.
Thanks a lot.
Be well.
It's my pleasure, guys. Anytime. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. See ya.
That's the terrific Alana Rizzo. She's host of Fair Territory. She's a contributor to Blue Jay Central. She's with Nesson. And she covered the Dodgers for a long time. That is, you know, the thing with Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, I talked to Jason Stark about this. I think we appreciate him. But I think there were so many missed. It's like I feel like I've missed a lot of his career because he's been hurt.
Yeah.
And because he's been on the West Coast.
That's fair.
And I think my guess is there are a lot of people. And I'm not taking it. Listen, he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. But I think there are a lot of people, and I include myself in this, I don't think I've appreciated Clayton Kershaw as much as I should have appreciated him, just because I haven't seen that much of his career, right? Like, if you ask me, Dodgers World Series, what do I think of? I mean, even the COVID World Series. I mean, what do I think of? I mean, I think of Shohei.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of guys I run through with those teams before I get to Clayton Kershaw. And that's I wouldn't say it's sad, but it is something to think about. I think a lot of us don't appreciate him And I think those like Alana, who got to see him on a day-to-day basis at his height, probably realize how good he is.
Well, I mean, let's be fair. It's the playoffs that everybody remembers. He's 13-13 with an ERA of 4.5. That's what everybody remembers.
Because that's when you see him nationally most of the time.
He's a Dodger. He's always in him.
Right.
Like, and sometimes he's not the best at it. Like, you know, for me anyway, he'd be one of the last names you'd want pitching a big, giant game. Like, Game 7, I wouldn't think Clayton would be the guy that you would want to hand the ball to. And just sort of guys on the outside or fans of baseball on the outside looking in, that's the way they see Clayton. See? They don't see it the way Alana sees it. Now, again, the regular season, he's tremendous. Playoff times comes, it's a little different story. So, yeah, I get it. I mean, he's a great pitcher. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But it's just the playoffs, I think, that everybody outside of L.A.,
absolutely,
that's the only thing really they remember, because that's the lasting impression is him giving it up.
For the most part, that's the only time a lot of people watch Clayton Kershaw pitch, because not everybody gets the MLB package and watches all the Dodgers games. Not everybody sees the Dodgers whenever they're on Fox or whatever. But most people see the Dodgers, and I really do believe this, especially a lot of just sports fans make their decision about a player based on what they see in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the playoffs haven't been fair for Clayton Kershaw. Flip it another way. You look at a guy like Nathan Eovaldi. People love Nathan. Well, Nathan Eovaldi's clutch. Why is he clutch?
How many teams you think would be calling the Rangers going, is he available?
Because I know one team that should be calling him.
I think there'll be a lot of teams.
The thing about Nathan Eovaldi is the dude will pitch out of the bullpen for you if you want him to in the postseason.
Yeah, it's not why the Blue Jays would get him. He'd be pitching game one.
No, but I'm saying, game seven or whatever, the dude will pitch out. He'll answer the call if you need him out of the bullpen like he did in Boston.
Yeah, with Bochy there being his last year, I'm not sure they're going to punt anyway. But, you know, point being is, if you got enough prospects and you think you can make a run at a guy like that, it is amazing how, you know, sort of that mindset of you can't wait for everybody to sort of give the phone call to try and get a guy who's the best in October. Everybody thinks about the lights, the brightest. How good is he? Can he get the best hitters on planet Earth out when it matters the most? And it's Eovaldi of all people who just go out there and basically dominate people, which is kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, and I keep thinking back to that postseason where he literally did everything for the Red Sox. I mean, he pitched a ton of innings in that extra inning game. You're right. You know, I know his name comes up every now and then, but man, Boch's last year.
I'd be shocked if they punt.
And you know what? And again, their GM is so aggressive. I can see him doing the exact opposite. I can see him saying, oh, to hell with that. I'm going to go out and try to add to this. You know, maybe I've got to take a little bit out of one side of the game. You know, maybe I can get some for Aroldis Garcia or Adolis Garcia. If I do that, can I get somebody else? But, boy, if they did put Nathan Eovaldi on the market, it'd be a lot of teams lining up.
Yeah, DeGrom's a little better with where your manager's at. It ain't happening. But, you know, they're starting to hit a little bit better, I think. The American League, again, if you made the right moves, it'll take moves. If you do it, you have a decent chance.
Did you read they're doing an in-season study of their ballpark, about the offense in their ballpark? Why the ball isn't flying out as much as it used to?
It's a little overthinking it, ain't it?
No, because they stopped hitting.
They did. You think that has more to do about the player than the ballpark?
All I'm saying is they're doing it. I'm not saying that I agree with it. I just said to you. I just threw that.
Again, I think it gets back to your manager, right, and the urgency and what you're trying to do, and if that can help you, and you think that's the reason why. I mean, I've never seen anybody redo a stadium.
Well, they're not going to redo the stadium. I think they're just trying to. They want to find out what's going on, and maybe
don't hit it there.
No, maybe they need. Maybe the better players
would help.
Maybe the profile of hitter they've been looking for.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not that silly. If they're going to go to the trade deadline, and for whatever reason the park's playing different, there's a guy in the market that maybe profiles better. They go out and get him.
Yeah. See many home games they're playing second half to.
Brian Anderson is a Tampa Bay Rays TV analyst. Yandy Diaz, I was wrong. He doesn't think they're the best team in the American League. He thinks they're the best team in baseball. We'll talk to Brian Anderson about the Rays. That'd be fun seeing them in Miami. We got Jays tickets to give away, and the great Dan Shulman joins us as well. It's Blue Jays talk. It's Blair and Barker for Friday. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Sportsnet.